guys, this is Henrik here with Red Ice TV. Thank you so much for tuning in. We have Vincent James from the Red Elephants YouTube channel with us today to talk about one of his recent videos that I learned was not removed but deleted by Vincent because, of course, he didn't want to get his whole channel shut down, which I completely understand. But the video was about this lady, this woman who's going around mass flagging videos. She's trying to get channels censored and videos blocked and content that she doesn't approve of, basically. So I hope that we can talk about that video today because, of course, as we know, if you talk about certain topics that are protected or quarantined themselves, you can even get your own channel blocked and censored and shut down. Like what happened with Alex Jones, for example. People that talked about Alex Jones after they had terminated his account were actually targeted themselves. Like you're not even, it's like a non-personed, he's been non-personed. You can't address this person whatsoever. So this is a bizarre scenario that we're in. But regardless, this person that we're going to talk about and her actions today is, of course, a journalist. She is a public figure. Therefore, of course, she's open to criticism, especially considering her behavior in degrading and mass flagging videos to try to get them censored and banned and taken down and all that kind of stuff. And in Vincent's video, he referenced a couple of examples. There was some by Alsup that had like 1 million views. There was one that Lana did that had about 600,000 views. So basically, this is popular material. This is stuff that people want to see. It wants to get out there. And so these individuals, these people are, of course, intolerant of the fact that people have different opinions than they do. They're trying to flag it with the fuzzy words such as hate speech or bullying or harassment, these undefined terms which no one really knows exactly what it means and at what point you cross into these boundaries simply by talking about individuals and people's behavior that are out there in the open and public. So we're going to talk in specifics here with Vincent James today about the video that he did and explain to us a little bit about the video that you did and what happened to it.
Yeah, so I saw this thread that was taking place on Twitter, and it was someone posting screenshots of this lady, Talia Levin, who was formerly a fact checker, quote unquote, for The New Yorker, except she didn't do her job too well because she called this paraplegic veteran who worked for ICE a Nazi because he had a quote unquote Nazi tattoo. Turned out it wasn't. This guy received death threats. His family received death threats. So not too great at the whole fact-checking role that she was given at The New Yorker. But she had posted a bunch of tweets about different videos that she felt were triggering to her, one of which was your video, one of your Red Ice's video. Another video was by Mark Collette. Two videos were another video by James Alsup and a few other creators as well. And basically what she was doing was she was encouraging this online mass flagging campaign against these videos in which she was successful at in multiple of the cases that she posted, more particularly the main source of the Twitter thread that she started was about your video, Red Ice, where it talks about why the media encourages white females to mix with other race males. And that video was put into limited state within 90 seconds, I think I saw from the thread, right after she posted about it. And then the second video in the thread was a Mark Collette video, which was about the LGBT, some people in the LGBT community, not all, but some kind of are pedophilia apologists, if you may. People in the media are trying to downplay the subject of pedophilia. People in Hollywood certainly love their pedophilia. And this video was about that. Mark Collette, as you know, he's very calm. He goes through the facts and stuff like that. That video was put into limited state within, just a few minutes of her adding that to her Twitter thread. So I saw this and I was like, this can't be going. This can't go on without someone responding to her, right? And so I created a video about it. And I prefaced the video with, I'm not encouraging bullying. I'm not encouraging harassment of this person. I just want to bring attention to what's going on right now. And so she got that video and then she posted about that video. It got at first demonetized and I knew where it was going. I knew it was going to go into limited state and then eventually flagged and I was going to get a strike on the account because I don't feel like I clarified myself enough on what the intention of the video was. I probably could have did a better job on that because I've read the TOS on YouTube and I kind of know how to play that fine line. And so I just decided it's probably best now that she found the video, that I just remove it just to avoid getting, you know, the strike and putting my account unable to.
And that's what they want, of course, self censorship, right? That's right. Actually, that's the worst case of censorship. It's the worst because it enables them even to not even do any work. And we kind of know where that is. Now, I agree with you. I totally agree in the sense that, you know, is it worth attacking this person more or is it worth having your channel more, right? You got to, you know, draw a line somewhere. So I definitely understand that. You said it's available on BitChute still, though. She can't touch that. So it's still available there for people who want to see it. I can add a link to that in the description. But it was good because it was going through some of the biases, of course, that this person has, and also the ability to really what's happening here. I want to get your take on this in terms of YouTube as a platform, that it effectively has turned into this. You know, if someone's emotions are hurt by an argument, be they rational and logical, be they, emotional, be they whatever they are, it's turning into this tool that a mob can use, right? That certain opinions, which they don't approve of, which they don't like, can be mass flagged. And then there's like an auto system where the platform basically just kind of quarantines those videos because it's reacting like, well, if it's enough people reacting, that surely there has to be something against this, right? They haven't really combated this issue of brigading yet, where you can just employ an army to mass censor or mass, block certain things or get something terminated. So clearly YouTube has a massive problems, you know, on their hand because they've entered into this path of trying to regulate the content that's on the platform, isn't it?
Right. You know, they should come up with something. And I tweeted at them about this. A lot of times they respond once you get enough replies in the thread. And I said, hey, have you done anything about this mass flagging, how the effects of it? I mean, there has to be some sort of algorithm that you could write, some sort of code that you can write to determine if the mass flagging occurred within a very short amount of time, within the same hour. You know, if there's a bunch of flags, a bunch of reports on the video that occur within the same hour, then those reports should be null and void and left for further review, because obviously it's a mass flagging campaign. I mean, it's not often that someone posts, like, let's say, like child pornography or something that is, we all agree, is terrible, right? It's not often that someone can post something like that and then have a whole bunch of people view it all of a sudden and then mass flag it, because likely 9 times out of 10, those channels wouldn't have any subscribers anyway. So it'd be after a while until it's actually discovered. They have to do something about this because it's a serious problem and people are using this to their advantage. Now, in the old days, you could mass flag and then the video would just get taken down immediately. At least they put it in limited state and then you have the chance to appeal it.
Right, exactly. But, you know, it's not the only issue, of course, here either. We have this issue of them using very fuzzy terminology and words, of course, that put things into a camp where you can't really get a clear definition. I've heard some of the tech people themselves even talk about this, that they don't want to draw a clear line because then people can basically walk right up to that line and kind of nudge on it and you know, still be edgy enough and still get messages through without actually being violation of them. So they have chosen terms and concepts which are by definition themselves fuzzy, such as hate speech, or that this is harassment or bullying, or this is, you know, whatever word they choose at the time. But it causes, of course, the creator to not truly understand what is allowed and what is not allowed on the platform. And so you're left with these people, like on YouTube, who, of course, have a clear liberal bias. They have a lefty bias. They're anti, you know, we've noticed this since the adpocalypse, of course. They are mass, you know, disabling the ad revenue for people who are, you know, who are effectively have unpopular views and beliefs. So, you know, YouTube is definitely obviously shooting themselves in the foot, Vincent. So I don't see how they can continue like this. Now, I was hoping that YouTube would be one of the tech companies that took place in the hearing today, where Twitter and Facebook was there. Dorsey and Sheryl Sandberg from Facebook were there. Google actually didn't show up. They're meant to be there. Larry Page or the Indian guy, Patel. The head up of Google and Alphabet. They were supposed to be there. They didn't show, but I'd love to see YouTube on there too and actually get confronted, not on the issue of Russian collusion, but on the issue of censorship and what they are doing. But how do you see these tech platforms moving forward? Because obviously they have a major issue and more creators are being fed up and you know, they're tired of their behavior.
Right. Yeah, I was watching that and I didn't see any really true hard questions, as you said before, of on the issue of censorship on conservatives. You know, it was mostly just about like foreign interference and we have to uphold democracy and blah, 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 blah. No one under 40 really cares about this like foreign interference and like buying Russian people buying ads on Facebook. If you're intelligent enough, then you could find out for yourself what's real and what's fake. But what we do care about is this massive censorship that is going on right now. Our particular page on Facebook, for instance, which Sheryl Sandberg was representing Facebook today, lost millions upon millions in reach since the 2016 election. We were reaching an upwards of 28 million people per week. 28 million people per week organically on Facebook. Leading up to and after, shortly after the 2016 election. 6 months go by after the 2016 election, that goes down to 4 million. So there's clearly some suppression going on here. On Twitter, the same thing. Our account was banned for quote unquote racism and hate speech, which I was just talking about fatherless homes in that particular tweet. No mention of race whatsoever in that tweet. And this is a problem. I heard Sheryl Sandberg and Jack Dorsey multiple times today, more so with Sheryl Sandberg, of course, who talked about hate speech. She mentioned hate speech and no one really grilled her on what exactly is hate speech. No one really said if you support a free and open debate, if you support a free and open discussion, that should include hate speech because our Supreme Court has deemed that the First Amendment protects hate speech in particular and specifically. So that's my feelings on that.
Yeah, I mean, it was, as you say, there was no real hard questions. And I know that this was actually on the issue. It's the same nutty Senate Intelligence Committee that are doing these hearings that's been going for, what is it, like over a year now about the Russia collusion bullshit? And so basically they want to drag in these platforms as they have an issue because they are responsible why Trump won the election, right? Because people actually managed to organically spread messages, pro-Trump messages, and kind of bypass the fake news. So the liberals on this panel, of course, want to try to charge these tech companies for being responsible for that. But as you say, that's not the story here. The story is that they are in clear violation on some of their own ideas about why they have these platforms. Facebook, I don't know, they sell your data. Yes, I get that. But Dorsey actually in the hearing multiple times, he was talking about that Twitter is the public square. It's a digital public square where people are, you know, get to voice opinions. But none of the senators or the people on the panel there questioned them when they brought up something like harassment or bullying or hate speech. None of them actually cared. What can you define that? What is that? I think one guy was talking about maybe there's some blurry lines or something like that. But that's really what needs to be, sorted out here. What do they mean? Can they define these terms? And at what point is, you know, someone else's feelings more important than someone else's political views, right? These are blurry lines here.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's just not. And I heard Jack Dorsey say that, and that could probably get him in trouble in the future if this continues to devolve into something where more people are getting censored, elections are getting screwed with because conservative pages are getting taken down and things like that. You have these activist employees at Facebook, these activist employees at Twitter and things like that. That's something that he could be held to account, you know, accountable on saying this is the public square, because that could turn into later on, I don't know if it's going to be 5 years from now or 10 years from now, if this continues, a Supreme Court case. Because if you're saying that this is the de facto town square, if you're saying that this is the de facto public square where 90% of conversations around America actually happen, then I think that the First Amendment should evolve to encompass the, you know, online speech, digital speech, because it is the de facto town square. Yeah, no one pressed them on this. No one talked about this. Everyone's talking about Russian collusion and Russian interference and what's going on in Miramar and what's going on here and what's going on in Iran and all of these different places. No one cares about those things.
No, I know.
We care about here, what's going on here right now. So yeah, that's
all over the West, right? I mean, YouTube is shutting down. You know, my country, Sweden, there's a new political party that popped up, Alternative for Sweden, right? And they're talking about repatriation. Of course, very unpopular political, you know, idea in this current climate that we're in. But nonetheless, it's their political right. They have it's in the democratic process. They can do more or less what they want in terms of the policies that they want to try to enforce within the Swedish political system. But they get their YouTube channels yanked. They have problems time and time again with censorship, and same issue here with mass flaggings and stuff like that. So it's not only even America. It's around the West really right now, where any kind of unpopular views or beliefs are trying to use platforms, which by de facto has become the new place where it's the marketplace of ideas. This is where you share them. This is where you discuss things. This is where you you know, get your voice heard, basically. Effectively, would be if you're barred from some of these platforms, that's like saying you can't go to the town square and you can't voice your opinions there because of whatever, right? So what they've been doing is they are turning into monopolies, and they are effectively meddling in the elections that are coming, in the sense that they're, you know, preventing certain viewpoints, political and ideological, from taking place or being part of that discussion. So if there's any meddling here, it would be these big tech companies and what they're doing with their platforms. How these handful of people who just, you know, there's been many competitors, they're just the ones that happened to create the platforms that became the successful ones. And now they're using that as a political tool, you know, to make sure that, you know, Hillary wins, or that Trump is out, or that now in the midterms coming up, right, that they'll lose the House and stuff like that. So this is the real tragedy here.
Right. This is a major problem, because if for some reason, you know, Republicans get crushed in the midterms in regards to the Senate, probably not likely, but the House, you know, who knows what can happen. If that does occur, then they're going to draft impeachment papers probably immediately. I mean, that's what they're going to do. They can't even confirm Kavanaugh, which is something that Lindsey Graham pointed out, which I can't stand Lindsey Graham, but he did say something that was important during those hearings, is that in normal times, someone like Kavanaugh would get an upwards of 90 votes or so. They can't even decide on that in these times right now. He had multiple interruptions. I think like 60 protesters showed up on day one.
Yeah,
day two, there's more protesters. There's people out there in like Handmaid's Tale uniforms protesting about the Roe v. Wade thing, in which, by the way, I've looked at them and I'd be fine with all of them having abortions personally. And, you know, all these protesters having abortions personally, but and not, you know, producing offspring. But I just think that they're not listening to us. They're not listening to us. And I've tried to encourage some of my subscribers on the channel and on Facebook to write your congressmen and senators, regardless of party lines, and tell them what matters to us, because research has shown that this is the best time to contact your representatives via like a letter format or something like that, because they are coming up for re-election, most of them. So, I mean, we have to find a way to tell these people what really matters to us. And it's not Russian foreign interference in Facebook buying ads or something like that.
No, exactly. It's petty and it's small. And they claim that these are the issues that are, you know, Russia's dividing Americans and stuff like no way. That's like, you know, the liberals have done a better job at that than anybody, right, in terms of how they're shattering and splintering people. And they're doing it with these wedge issues time and time again, whether it's, you know, open borders or, you know, mass migration or, you know, attack on just the white male and stuff like that. They do these things time and time again. But, you know, this is an interesting story about the Kavanaugh. I don't know if it's true, but someone, a protester, was actually seen getting paid before the meeting. I don't know if it's true, but she was the one who was arrested in there, and they were setting them off like, you know, one after another to disrupt the meeting in such a way. So, I mean, it's huge issues in America, but they can't even do this. And it's, you know, so to look at Russians is just projection of trying to say that someone else is to blame for the internal issues of America, when America has tremendous problems internally, right?
Right. I mean, you have some people like the Open Societies Foundation. You have people too dumb to realize that movements like Black Lives Matter were produced, were synthetically produced from within. In some of these cases, in a lot of these cases, probably all these cases. And, you know, you can tell by just starting really during the 2016 election and then kind of died down after the money went dry. You see these protesters, like you said, who are potentially allegedly getting paid outside after they did their service. You know, what I wonder, though, is that is it the corporate media actually paying some of these protesters to raise their ratings so that people actually watch the Senate hearings and it's just not like some boring thing like it used to be? I don't think anything's boring now that Trump is president, because they just hate him so much that there's news all the time to talk about. So it's good for channels like ours, of course, to talk, you know, because we never run out of things to talk about. And I think that possibly this could be something, you know, where the corporate media is like paying these protesters to boost their ratings or something. Who knows?
Yeah. Maybe it's
what else is it going to accomplish? I mean,
yeah,
it's just going to make the left look stupid.
It is, in a way. It's true. It's definitely, you know, disruptive. But I think that they're seeing this as a the resistance, right? This is what they can. Right. This is what they can do, and they have to pay people to do it. And you know, Facebook is talking about these, like, Sandberg was going on and on about these the inauthentic, you know, accounts and stuff like that. In other words, it's people to pretend to be someone else or whatever. But as you say, there's so much of that going on in this political theater that's happening right now, where people literally have to be paid money to go out and do something, or to, you know, break their, you know, to disrupt an event. And I don't want to go off on a tangent here too much, but even in Germany, right, there was this huge protest. You've been covering it too, Chemnitz. We had a couple of reporters there doing a report for us. And the following day, there was a lefty concert, but they basically have to bribe people with, you know, free rock music and like free ice cream and stuff like that to get people to like go out on the streets. And you can even turn the argument around and say, well, someone is paying for that. It costs money. Who's paying for that? The taxpayer, of course, right? So when people are standing in Germany, these right-wingers are saying, we are the people, they're the ones who actually are paying for the left to organize a counter-demonstration to them the following day. And they do this to try to get the numbers. But there's examples like this in America too, of course, where they have to turn it into a political circus to actually get some focus and some attention and some energy into the picture. Because I've never seen such audiences that are more dull and dry and, you know, low energy than some of these liberals and leftists.
Right. Yeah. I think that it's so funny. It's like, oh, let's have a rock concert. Then you have a bunch of right wing protesters or people who are concerned about immigration and the future composition of their country. And then they just like march into this huge rock concert and they're like, ooh, ice cream. And then they think that that's going to distract them from stopping to protest. I think that this is going to spread like wildfire. I think this is going to continue. I think Chemnitz was the start. But as far as like the Sandbergs of Facebook and the Zuckerbergs of Facebook and the rest of the Bergs of Facebook and some of these big major tech companies, I think them talking about foreign interference and fake accounts and falsified accounts and hate speech and things like that, we see what's going on here. Okay, the intelligence see what's going on here. You look to Brazil, where she even mentioned Brazil, and you have a right-wing candidate, Bolsonaro, who's probably going to win now that Lula was officially barred from the election. He wants to restore things like gun rights. He's touched on things like banning pornography. Like, he's a pretty far-right candidate, if you've seen some of the quotes that he said. And they've deleted hundreds of Facebook pages that were pro the right-wing candidate, pro-Bolsonaro, saying that they were fake and falsified accounts. They weren't who they said they were. I know some of these people that ran some of these pages. They were real people. They got their whole pages banned, some with 900,000 followers, and they've suppressed the reach of Bolsonaro in Brazil.
Talk about election meddling. And this is and I know that Brazil has, you know, they have their own division of Facebook, but ultimately you have to wonder, is this corporate decisions made at the American offices that are then passed down to the Brazilian ones? That's a foreign nation that's meddling in an election. That's not news to America, of course. They've been doing that since the Second World War. But in this particular case, how is that not interfering with and ultimately manipulating with people because they don't get access to the information otherwise, right?
Right, they did the same thing with Matteo Salvini. They're doing the same thing right now in Germany with the right-wing party and how it's gaining, you know, they're taking pages down. They're doing all sorts of different things right now. It's completely election meddling. And this goes back to, if you look back to the Bilderberg conference, I talked about this in the Chemnitz video I made, where their number one topic was the rise of populism, more so right-wing populism, of course.
Yeah, how do we stop it? Yeah.
How do we stop it? right? And then you see these tech companies, like the leaders of Facebook and the leaders of YouTube and the leaders of this and the leaders of that, saying, you know, reports coming out saying they're collaborating together, they're having meetings together, these people. I mean, come on, we know what's going on here. You're completely trying to undermine our election from within, and other countries too.
Yeah, exactly. And then you have, of course, on top of that, you have big tech meeting. Look at Alex Jones' ban. It needs to be remembered what happened here, because you had multiple parties operating supposedly independent of each other, but the decisions were made within minutes of each other in some cases, where he was shut down from multiple platforms at the same time. There was, I think it was an admitted meeting between Apple's Tim Cook and, was it Zuckerberg or something like that, that talked about, you know, banning him specifically, Alex Jones, and taking InfoWars pages down and stuff like that. So he, of course, showed up at the meeting, at the intelligence hearing today, to try to confront Jack Dorsey. Now, that went south. I think he managed to confront Rubio a little bit, but he didn't really get access to any of these people. And that's the other thing. He made a good point that while he's being deplatformed and just had these tremendous lies made about him, he has no way of responding. There's no way for us to fight back against the misinformation that's spread. And they have an information embargo. They have access only to some of these channels where we can communicate with our audiences, and they can make up whatever lies that they want about us. And, you know, as Alex said, he hasn't been able to defend himself by actually being a witness and being heard at some of these meetings. It's nuts. It's crazy.
Yeah, I think that Rubio, geez, did you see the way that he acted? God, that guy's a little punk.
That's the one I did miss. I didn't actually see the Rubio. Let me pull it up here. What happened?
Basically, he's like, keep your hands off me. The media can talk to this clown. He basically said, I don't even know who you are. It's clear that he knows who he is, if he's paid attention at all. I mean, is he that much in a bubble that he doesn't know who Alex Jones or InfoWars is? Come on. No one's believing that for a second. And then he basically said that, I don't need security, I'll fight. Like, he didn't say I'll fight you, but he essentially alluded to that. It was just funny seeing. And think of what Alex Jones, as you think about him, I don't care what you think about Alex Jones, gatekeeper, you know, conspiracy theorist, whatever the case may be. You're right. He has no way to respond to this. He has no way to fight back against it. People even mentioned it within this hearing. Someone mentioned it. He said, what do you think about people saying that this is that Sandy Hook was fake, essentially, is what he alluded to.
Right.
And even Sandberg was like, oh, even though we disagree with it, you're allowed to say it. Essentially, that's what she said. But Facebook took down all the Alex Jones pages. Yep. All the InfoWars pages are completely gone. And think of what Alex Jones think of him what you may. But he was very key in the 2016 election,
sure,
because he was producing videos like the whole He Will Not Divide Us videos and sharing them on his page and all these different pages, these videos coming out from the InfoWars, which got shared millions upon millions of times, probably, you know, leading people to InfoWars and then on to other people. So he was like the stepping stone to other people who get deeper into politics with a more realistic angle.
Yeah,
it's
ultimately irrelevant. I mean, one thing that they haven't discussed, I think one guy in the hearing brought it up. He said he had talked with Latvian and Estonian political representatives, and apparently they have some issue with Russia trying to meddle in their elections too, if that's even true. I don't doubt it, whatever. But he said the best tool that they had is to inform their citizens, inform their people of sharing information about what's happening and educate people. And it's the same thing here, that none of these platforms, as far as I've seen it, has really focused on the issue of like, well, hang on a minute, you know, it's free speech America. Everyone can listen to what they want. They can get the sources that they want. It's up to them to make up their own mind. They have to be informed. They have to be interested in the media that they're consuming, the information that they're consuming. Instead, Facebook and YouTube and Twitter and all these platforms have put themselves right in the heart of trying to determine what the truth is about any specific matter at any time. They have third-party fact checkers, which, of course, who's checking the checkers, right? You have that
the
issue.
ADL.
Exactly. The you know, SPLC, the ADL, they have like direct lines into some of these platforms. And they're going to be biased, obviously. So they can actually determine a story that's not true, that's been proven false. And then all of a sudden, they can just completely put a story in the memory hole because they can claim, well, that has been disproven now. when in reality it never has. And there's no philosophical debate around this anymore. I mean, it's worrying. It's truly Orwellian, you know, to use that term.
Right. I think it's an hour and 14 minutes, maybe an hour and 13 minutes in, Sandberg talks about the third party fact checkers applying like links, like Wikipedia articles, like what YouTube is doing underneath different videos that are about certain subjects. But when she talks about third party fact checkers, we all know who they are. That's the ADL. That's people that are just like her, connected very similar in DNA to Sheryl Sandberg. You know, the ADL are the ones who are creating this online hate speech index that is a machine learning technology, which these social media companies are implementing. The ADL is a foreign agent. They should have been recognized as a foreign agent under FARA legislation for many, many, many years. They should have already been recognized as a foreign agent. But people see them as like this anti-defamation league, this anti-hate league. But if you look at what they're about, you look at their about page, they're the only defamation that they're defending against is defamation against Israel. They are a company that is only for Israel's interest within the United States. Now are actors in who gets to say what on social media. So essentially, Israel, you can say, is controlling what we can say and can't say on social media.
Yeah, I'll talk about meddling.
The way it is.
I know, and there's so many other companies that have their finger in the American intelligence pie, and there's even Israeli companies that are getting contracts, very sensitive data contracts and security contracts and stuff like this. So this is ridiculous. I mean, you know, when Alex, not to get lost in his, you know, kind of labyrinthian concept, some of them, but he's talking about China, you know, Apple is moving to China. And although that's true, although it's true that Apple is handing over their encryption keys to the Chinese government and they de facto have an ability to spy on, you know, Americans and other people around the world in real time with the access to their smartphones and the apps that they're using and stuff like that. Although that's true, that's like talking about, I don't know, level 4 or 5 when there's like a level 1, 2, 3, 4 of other operatives and interest groups that already have their fingers not only in the American pie, they're literally at the wheel, they're at the helm and steering the country. So, you know, which level do you want to look at? If they were honest about election meddling, there are so many other issues that they could focus on and that they could talk about before they were thinking about Russia, you know, Russia or China or anything, you know?
Right. Russia and Iran. I wonder why they're most focused on Russia and Iran. We got to stop their meddling. But Israel's, you know, they're completely fine.
Free pass.
Yeah. ADL, come on in. Senators, come on, tell us where to go.
They're the moral ridiculous conscience of America. You
right.
know, Blumenthal right. was going to tell us what the score is. You know, yeah.
Sandberg.
It's amazing. You know what? Let's switch back a little bit and talk a little bit about the individual that we started talking about. I want to return to her a little bit. Talia
Lavin.
Yeah.
It's probably a change from Levin. I'm assuming,
mm-hmm.
just like many names change when they come over here as immigrants or whatever the case may be. I'm not saying she's an immigrant, but I'm sure her family comes from an immigrant background, and sometimes they change their names to essentially assimilate when they come over here. You see people with the last name of Wise, W-I-S-E. It's really W-E-I-S-S formerly, you know. So I'm sure her name derives from Levine. But yeah, that's the land whale in chief right there.
You know, there's a couple of articles that I just quickly checked out, which was kind of interesting. She's writing for the Village Voice. Take this one, for example. The real link between the White House and Kremlin. I went through it. This will be good, right? The real link between, you know, Putin and Trump. Here it is, right? Well, she goes through some history about Uzbekistan from the 80s and stuff. And then eventually there's a whole lot of nothing. And at the end, she says, we can hope, if only faintly, to attain clarity at some point about Trump's real relationship with Russia. Standard fail. You know, the other article I was checking out was this one is funny, though. It's okay to be white, but it's not enough. Right. And so she, of course, has to go to a fictional movie to try to get the scope on the history of America back at the 70s of something, a Spike Lee movie about the black Klansman. Anyway, there is a passage in there, too, where she's talking about whiteness exists to punish blackness. Whiteness exists to hurt those who are not white, okay? Whiteness exists to exert its own supremacy in a great feral and bitter taunt against those it loathes. Whiteness has no language of its own. Whiteness has no homeland, no cuisine, none of the markers that distinguish a culture worth celebrating. Check that out. And then she says, white pride, the notion that whiteness itself is something to boast about, is rooted in this vacuity. And that's why it manifests itself as violence, right? So she's using these $5 words like vacuity, right? Something that's lacking of thought or intelligence, empty-headedness, right? So basically all the things that, of course, white culture is behind, everything from the industrialization process to, you know, exploration of space and mapping of the globe, and, you know, we could just go on infinitum, is just baseless, completely. There's nothing there. I mean, it's clear, Vincent, that this lady has an intense bias. She has hate of white people. She's vindictive in her opinions. And of course, with the mechanism that she has in place, she manages to push opinions that she doesn't like off the internet, which is, of course, people have to question themselves is if these people who are so biased should have this ability to do that, or to dictating the discourse in both America and around the world in terms of what goes and what doesn't go when it comes to politics, ideology. It just floors me the more I'm thinking about this.
Right. And then she talks about other people being hateful. And then she tweeted something out where, oh, if you donate to my PayPal, after I talked about how bad you white people are, donate to my PayPal because donating to an overweight Jew would really piss off those white supremacists that we all hate, right? She seems quite vacuous. It's the ultimate Dunning-Kruger effect, right, where she tries to be more intelligent than she actually is. I'm pretty sure that she was probably a diversity. She got in on her diversity into Harvard or wherever I think she went to Harvard or something like that. But yeah, her article there was awfully verbose, way more verbose than it actually needed to be. Like you said, the $5 words and stuff like that. But when she talks about whiteness not being a real thing, not being a culture you should be able to celebrate without a cuisine and things like that. Well, then if she's using that same term as whiteness, like not ethnicity, not German, not Portuguese, not, you know, Italian, not French, whatever the case may be, then she uses blackness within the same paragraph. What's blackness? I mean, are we talking Nigerian, Kenyan? Are we talking sub-Saharan African? Are we talking about South African? What are we talking about here? If you're saying that whiteness doesn't exist, but then you use blackness as if it's a real thing in your social construct or whatever the case may be, those two are dichotomous. You can't use those two terms in the way that you're using them in the same exact paragraph and say one is real and one's not. Whiteness, as we know it, is people of mostly European descent. It certainly has a cuisine from pastas to German sausage to Polish food to French food to all sorts of different things. Certainly has a culture that you can celebrate, and this is a culture that created everything that we use, from your phones to your computers to your lights to your everything that you use, every great technology that you use, and every great civilization that we live in. Whiteness built that. And so when you clearly have a clear nefarious intentions, you have clear nefarious intentions for attacking whiteness, and really you just have to dig a little bit deeper, find out who this person is, and then it becomes clear on why she hates white people so much.
Yeah, exactly. There's a lot of there's a lot of warring elements here in terms of, like, you know, how the discourse is being had and how mass flaggings and brigadings is being used and stuff like that. Ultimately, people have to decide if they want to hear information, you know, for themselves and make up their own mind. Because I think they look down on people, like, you're not capable or able to figure out what fake news is and stuff like that, right? That somehow you hear in these hearings and stuff like that too, that, well, this is influence. They're influencing, you know, elections or something. Like, everything that you do on some level is going to influence something and someone. That's what we do. We want to do that. We want to have ideas that spread. We want to, you know, get those out there. And in that regard, there's no difference between the left and the right. I mean, they all want to win, right? They think they have better ideas. And if those are implemented, you know, things will become better in the world and society, right? So I think all of us can agree on that, maybe. But this aspect that the platforms themselves have taken a clear stance against what currently are unpopular ideas. And in some cases, it's not even that they're that unpopular. It's not even that they have a minority on their side. In some cases, it's just flat out like, you know, Trump is the president of the United States. He's like, it's not a fringe character, you know, some of the things he says, but they're treating it like it's something on the far right or something like that. And therefore, it's illegitimate in itself. And they see a right to shut down people who support him, you know, Trump supporting groups, or whether it's, you know, just conservative people, it's if it's nationalists, if it's people who are into, you know, populism, whatever it is. But they're finding ways of shutting down people and shutting down their ability to speak. And that's, I didn't think it would happen this fast in America, Vincent. You know, I thought it would be taking a while to dismantle the rights, the free speech tradition that America has and that people even around the world has come to be able to utilize and have, you know, the freedom of expression, have the First Amendment. But that seems to have just, boom, gone away since, I don't know, when did it kick in? After the Trump presidency, right? That's really when they went on full-fledged attack, because they figured if they can do this, right, if we can't control them anymore with our fake news, if we can't, you know, dictate what people should do, I think they realize that social media is such a powerful tool to organically spread messages to the people, for the people. And so the control freaks that they are decided, all right, it's time to take it out. It's time to regulate it, control it. What do you see at the end of that, though? Is it going to be internet IDs? It's going to be you're not going to be able to be anonymous anymore online. What do you think the offered solutions is going to be to this clear problem that we have?
Well, if you already have an online footprint, I think that it's already at this point inevitable that you're not going to be anonymous online anymore. If you've already made kind of this footprint for yourself, even if you delete your Facebook page and your Twitter account or whatever the case may be, those things are still archived away. You can still find them. You know, even when you Google search an article that's been deleted, the headline in Google still comes up. When you click on it, it doesn't go to the article. So the online footprint is there. I don't think that anyone is really anonymous except for maybe some of the older people that don't really use the internet too much. I mean, as far as like believing the fake news or who really falls for it or who really gets influenced, I mean, really, it's just baby boomers, some of the silent generation, some of the really older people that actually believe some of these articles that pop up, like Elvis Presley came back from the, you know, some of these really crazy fake news articles that you see pop up on Facebook. I mean, that's not the majority of the population. I mean, come on. Is this really truly an issue? Do we really have to put Wikipedia articles like YouTube is doing underneath Facebook posts? And what she said was limit distribution, right? This is something that's very important, because when they were grilled before, these Facebook executives, they talked about limiting distribution. There were some journalists who said, why do you allow people like Alex Jones on your platform? This was back before he got banned from Facebook. Basically, they said, some of these things are vulgar. Some of these things, what he says, I can't believe you allow on your platform. Basically, what they said was they talked about limiting distribution. We saw Alex Jones's numbers and InfoWars numbers on Facebook go down dramatically, just like our page went down. They also talked about Fox News. Why do you allow Fox News on Facebook? These journalists were asking. They talk about them sharing fake news and blah, 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 blah. Fox News is mainstream media. Fox News is mainstream propaganda just as much as CNN is. But they wanted them off Facebook. Facebook execs also talked about limiting distribution and referred to Fox News while doing it. So they are certainly doing something to influence our elections, to cater to these left-wing journos and some of these other, globalists within our society. And it's not right. And no one's really talking about it on that panel there during that hearing.
No, definitely not. And that's super annoying that no one really has the hard, you know, questions or put them up against the wall. Hopefully there'll be more of these. But, you know, again, no one is really charging them on this. I think there was one hearing at some point where they, you know, wheeled out like Diamond and Silk or something like that they had been, you know, blocked on Facebook. And that's obviously, you know, good that that's coming to the forefront, but it's clearly not enough. So where do you see, I don't know, legislation or Internet Bill of Rights? There's different ideas floating around about what needs to happen here in terms of laws or basically being enforced that some of these companies can't shut down people. Because right now there's two issues. One is they all drop the ball when they say bullying or harassment or hate speech, right? So there's no clear definitions. So those could still always be employed by someone who they don't like. And so that's a problem. And the second layer, of course, is a problem that they don't allow even just some mainstream sources in some cases to get out there. So the risk I see, Vincent, is that, you know, they might move the goalposts. If something is down, they might move the goalposts just to include, you know, Fox News. They try the hardest to just limit it super tight to this narrow corridor of opinions. But if they can, with legislation, break it up maybe a little bit, and Fox News can be in there, and, you know, maybe even Alex Jones, but probably not, but maybe Alex Jones could be in there. There's still people outside of that corridor, which, you know, could be, can have kooky, crazy ideas to unpopular ideas to radical ideas. But if it's true that we have free speech in America, then everyone should be allowed to say whatever they want. You know what I mean?
Right. Exactly. As long as it's legal. Right. As long as it's not illicit in nature saying I'm going to kill someone or go kill this person. That's pretty much it. And then child pornography, some porn, some other things that are illegal by U.S. law. And this is what the Supreme Court has decided on unanimously 6 times. Unanimously. So it certainly protects hate speech, our First Amendment. And so should the public square, which Jack, like I said, he said public square multiple times. Someone's going to hold him to that later on. Now, mind you, these hearings wouldn't even, these hearings are good that they're happening. These hearings wouldn't have happened if Hillary Clinton was president. That's 100% for sure. So at least we do get some grilling going on in the case of Jim Jordan, Matt Gaetz, Ted Cruz, who, I hate Ted Cruz, I can't stand that guy. But at least he's actually grilling some of these people in some of the previous hearings that we've seen. And there will be more hearings to come, you can guarantee that. Now, again, like I've said, I can't stress enough how important it is. And I made a video about this, and I actually included a letter template. All you have to do is copy it, paste it, and mail it out to your representative. I included the link on how you can find the address to your representative. Very simple. You go to this video, you watch this video, you do what it says, and you contact your representative. If they get thousands upon thousands of letters, maybe, just maybe, someone will bring it up in the next hearing that happens. And it's just, it's very important that we do this. Because this is the only way we have to use the current game to fight back against and disarm some of these tactics that they're using against us.
Yeah, definitely. And I see it as a temporary issue too, though, to be honest. I mean, not that it couldn't go wrong or anything, but it's clear that the pushback, the resentment, in the same way that Trump has brought so much attention to just how bad the news media is, just how fake they are, just how disgusting they are in their lies and in the reporting. This issue is exposing just how biased some of these people behind these companies are, and just how much influence they really hold by shadow banning people, by throttling, or as you said, that the Facebook have been talking about in terms of, like, they demote posts, right? They have these truth verification labels now and stuff like that, which is, like, on one hand, it's mob rule, whatever the mass thinks, like, that's got to be the truth. Same thing with YouTube, really. If you have a mass flagging of a mob, then, well, it has to be something offensive. You know, machine learning doesn't matter. Just stand off and block it immediately, right? So there's no debate. There's no room for, like, wiggle room for actually arguing why you say something or why you have an opinion that you do, or can you get some proof that it's hateful or anything like that? You don't. They just shut it down, right? But I think it's going to backfire. That's my point here, Vincent, that, you know, it's not evident of a system, an establishment that is in control and that is stable and secure in its positions. It's weak and it's afraid of different opinions, of people thinking differently, bringing different ideas to the table. And they're also afraid of those ideas actually reaching through. I think there was a tweet, if I'm not mistaken, by the Talia girl there, that you used as well, in one of her threads. She said something about how these videos reaches the minds of young, rational people, or you know, that they have common sense, that they have an ability to think for themselves. And I think it was a slip up. Like she was saying that, well, if it's so bad and so ridiculous what these videos discuss, why would anybody be convinced by them, right? So if it's a rational mind, they can make up their own mind, they can see. So what I'm saying is they're afraid of this actually convincing people and it actually reaching people. You know, the videos we're talking about had a million views, 500,000 views in some cases. People want to hear this. They're hungry for that kind of level of information. And for them just try to put the lid on this is obviously not going to work in the long term, Vincent. I mean, it's going to bubble over at some point.
Right. I mean, it's it's really bad that you have to hide dissenting opinions, that you have to hide differing opinions, you have to hide differing facts. What are you trying to hide? That's my first question. You look at some of these occurrences throughout history, some of these genocides that we know, you know, we see in our movies, we see in our books and things like that. And, you know, you have companies, for instance, in one particular occurrence throughout history, you have companies like Amazon, who literally have banned books about with differing opinions to the actual what we know as historical fact, differing opinions from that, banning those books from Amazon. You have people who are creating laws in Europe, European countries, against talking or having an opposite or dichotomous opinion about a particular occurrence. You can be thrown in prison in some cases for bringing a differing opinion to those different occurrences throughout history. What are you trying to hide? That would be my first question. Why are they trying to block these voices? Why are they trying to block these channels? Why are they banning them? We must go check it out. Let's go see what they're saying. I'm sure that they got an uptick in traffic InfoWars after this whole thing happened. I mean, come on. I mean, his like whole statement on this, I'm sure that he was the most viewed video ever. But the problem is though, what's true is that before the election, he was pulling in like 4, 5, 10,000 people live watching him on his videos. Today, I mean, like if he was still on Facebook right now, the last time I saw him live on Facebook, 400, if he was lucky. So something's happening, and it's just not right what they're doing. And you're right, it will boil over eventually, and people will get sick and tired of it and come to alternative platforms, alternative sources, and things like that. And that's what's happening right now. Look at the corporate media. They're dying out completely.
Absolutely, yeah, you're right. So, I mean, it's clear that this is far from over. This is a fight that's really just beginning. The future of the internet, what is going to be, what we're going to be capable of sharing with each other, what opinions are going to be banned and outlawed. And I mean, you're right in the sense that, you know, the establishment is afraid of what's found there, but they're taking this position. Well, it has been proven false, so then it's okay to ban them or shut them down, right? So, and it's a really worrying thing because, of course, that's nothing else than authoritarianism. It's like saying and dictating what the reality is, what the truth of something is. There's no room for debate. There's no room for argument. And although I know that they're 100% secure in their positions and they think they're right or whatever, even they, some of them, must see that at some point there could be someone coming along and doing it from the opposite side of the fence, you know, from another perspective, and say, well, these ideas have been banned. And it has to be a way of being able to reach these people and make them understand that it's like the best way forward is to put all the ideas out on the table. Let's discuss everything. Let's just churn this out. Let's have philosophical debates, historical debates, ideological, political debates, all of this stuff. It's weird because the internet was meant to be this platform where, or this mechanism by which people could reach each other and we could get more information and more ideas and more things. But what actually has happened is that people get more and more isolated in their own little self-reinforcing bubbles, right? And YouTube, by not allowing, for example, people to see related videos that counter the official story of something, is creating echo chambers, right? Their own liberal echo chambers, which just repeats and repeats and repeats the same old, you know, biased truth, if you will, and no new ideas really coming to the picture. So it really, they have an opportunity, depending on what happens, to really ruin everything that actually was good about these platforms and even about the internet itself. How do you see this?
Yeah, completely. I mean, it is an echo chamber. I mean, they're trying to get their safe space, their digital safe space. That's what they're trying to do. And an entire generation of people have been completely screwed up. I'm very interested to see what happens with Generation Z and how they kind of act towards this stuff. I think it's going to be a rebellious one. I think it's going to be a polar opposite one on average, most people. And yeah, I mean, that's exactly what they're trying to do. Just like with this Talia Levin, she's trying to ban people she doesn't like off of a platform she doesn't even use. She's not on YouTube. And so she wants, you know, these types of people, they want your opinions gone. We can't refute them. So we want your opinions gone because we want to still be able to play on this whole racist, Nazi, KKK narrative.
That's all they know how to do. That's all they know how to do. Throw words at you and dangerous words and feeling bad. And, you know, that's all it is. There's no breaking down the arguments. There's nothing, you know. Anyway, go on, Vincent.
No response videos, right? We don't see that. And, you know, when we were doing a lot of debates on YouTube and things like that, it's kind of died down. But there was never a time where I actually got a liberal to accept a debate with me, like an actual liberal to accept a debate with me. And we had to resort to debating other people on the right about economics, you know, economic disagreements, social disagreement, you know, these different things, these little small disagreements that we've had. So that just goes to show you, on average, what the standard run of the mill everyday liberal looks like. And that's what they look like. They're going to scream at you. This is the whole cult. It's the same thing that happened with the Cultural Revolution in China. They call you the name. They label you this name. And if someone else doesn't label you that name, then they're suspect as well. So they have to do it. And this is how you break down a society, along with 100 other things that Marx and Engels talked about. And it's what's going on right now. I mean, the white man has become the bourgeoisie. The internet has become this place where they're using it to bully people off of and attack advertisers and things like that. And you know, create these huge mass flagging, mass brigading campaigns. It's a very, very, very sad state. And I think the next generation is rebelling against this. We've seen evidence of this already.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, we're going to round up here in a little bit, but it's been a good discussion. There's a lot that we could add to it, of course. There's a lot of issues and a lot of problems with, you know, just the freedom to be able to voice your opinions, no matter how unpopular they are. And the fact that there shouldn't be a handful of judges one way or another that's sitting there to decide this. This is, of course, a cultural dialogue, right? They're trying to shift the window so far to the left that anything which is even fairly, I don't know, centric, really, if you just went back 20 years or something like that, a rational, your everyday man and woman position that was somewhat centrist is today seen as something which is completely far right and extreme and whatever. And this is how they've managed to move the discourse. They have moved everything so far left that even just if your grandpa, you know, showed up and put his opinions in, he would be seen as some kind of a neo-Nazi that was like a right-wing extremist or something like that. So it's really ridiculous, but I think, as you say, it's definitely going to be it's going to be a backlash against this. It's going to backfire, and I think that they don't know the types of individuals that they're creating that have to be much more sly and capable of arguing and finding ways to get their messages out to try to basically we're coming up against an establishment which is trying to completely eradicate us, not only off of the internet but actually of the globe of itself. But we are going to develop our faculties in terms of how we can fight this and break through. While, as you say, they're creating these like pansies in diapers that are screaming at anything that they don't agree with and demand that someone higher authority than them take it down or block it or whatever. I mean, what happened? If you don't like it, just click away. He's like, you don't have to watch it. You don't have to view it. And this British lady, an MEP in England, they were talking about how she came across some video that we had done and she was like aghast that it was like, you know, showed up as related. She'd probably searched for, I don't know, like white genocide or something or population replacement. And up came a video and you're like, why is YouTube recommending it to me? Well, you don't have to click in on it, right? And it's this completely authoritarian refusal to recognize that there's other people who think differently. They have different opinions than you. They don't like what you're coming with. And just get over it. Get on with your life and just show that you have better ideas. But that's not the time we're in right now.
I mean, that's something that I would say. I mean, if like, let's say the roles were reversed, that's something that I would say to people complaining about it, right? Let's say, like, for instance, conservatives control the internet and whatever the case may be, TV, whatever. And then someone would complain to us. I mean, certainly, that's something that likely we would say as well, right? It's just, hey, sorry, if you don't like it, click away from it.
Yeah.
I mean, why aren't people saying this? Why do we see someone during the hearing say, you know, ask Sheryl Sandberg if denying that Sandy Hook happened was hate speech and against your policies, And then her say no, essentially, is what she said, using semantics. Why didn't he further challenge that? Why didn't he say, then why was Alex Jones kicked off of your platform? Because that's we all know what he was talking about when he asked that question. Exactly. Why do we have no representation? Who chose this panel of people to grill these people? Where's the rest of them? They're at the other hearing, I suppose. But
and why do they insult the intelligence of their audiences at the same time? Well, we know that you're so dumb that you're not going to be able to figure this out, right? You can't do research. You can't think logically. So we'll make the decisions for you, okay? We'll protect you from this wicked, evil material here. I mean, it's insulting. And it's, as you say, they can just say, well, why does it concern you? This is the people that have different opinions. Just click away. You don't have to watch it. It's really that simple.
Why did they choose to have this hearing in the same day as the Kavanaugh hearings, too? That's weird.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I'm sure. Right. Because Jack Dorsey was freaking out. I mean, we don't know if he actually took down those QFD bans or not, or if he just changed the algorithm to make it seem like no one was quality filtered banned anymore. But he took those off, or it went away. And then he starts tweeting out after the hearings that we want free and open space. We want free and open discussion. He's the only one that didn't ban Alex Jones in InfoWars so far. What's going on? Like, where is this going? I want to see more hearings. We want to see more grillings happening. I guess it'll get to that point eventually. I said this like 7 months ago when I first stole the term. I hijacked the term Internet Bill of Rights from the AT&T CEO and used it for, like, in this context. I said that this is going to eventually lead to something where some regulation might come into place. Google didn't even show up. Are they going to start being broken up now? Like, what's happening? Like,
yeah, exactly. Are they going to be held accountable? Last point of this, then, Vincent, I hope that Trump is going to act on this in some way. And there's been rumors, there's been signs that something is moving in terms of this, in terms of him, doing executive orders or something to step in a drastic way. Because in a way, of course, these companies are monopolies at this point. They're so large that it really is in the public's interest. And in many cases, too, as people have pointed out, they have received a tremendous amount of subsidies in order to build up these companies. So they are taxpayer funded. They are not completely just built from the ground up by their own sweat and blood and tears or whatever. It's mass efforts by the nations collectively to build these platforms and build it up. And everyone's contributing. They're contributing their data, of course, which generates revenue for Facebook and stuff like this. So I guess to steal a term from the leftists, you didn't build this, right?
I was just going to say that was Obama. Yeah,
who didn't
build that, right?
Exactly.
I mean, they did build it. They put in the hard work. They sacrificed, right? So essentially, I mean, but it is the people. And if you admit that this is the town square, then you have to treat it like it is the town square. And there's no such thing as hate speech. Okay, there's no such thing as, hey, I'm all down for banning people, foreign actors and foreign interference and all that different things. You know, all those different things. I'm okay with that. But we have to start really thinking about this seriously. It's very important, though, that when you talked about Trump doing something, something's happening right now where Tucker Carlson has not only become the voice that young people are listening to, it's the only person that they watch on Fox News, but he's also become a direct channel to Donald Trump. So we saw him talk about South Africa. Trump talked about South Africa. We saw this happen time and time again. I wonder what he's going to have to say about the hearings today, if he's going to say something. He talked about the censorship before, then Trump talked about it. Trump tweeted out a video showing that Google never, ever promoted his State of the Union address, but promoted Barack Obama's State of the Union address every single year. So there's clear bias here. This has to be addressed, okay? We have to do something about this. The Internet Bill of Rights, I'm all down for it, because there should be something that states, as long as it's legal, as long as you're a U.S. citizen, you can say whatever you want to say.
Yep, that's absolutely right. Okay, Vincent, we're going to round up here. Of course, people want to check out more, go to the Red Elephants YouTube channel. Is your channel in good standing, by the way, Vincent? Do you have any strikes on it? Is it in limbo? Is everything good?
Good, knock on wood.
Yeah, exactly. Because it seems, you know, who's it going to be today, right? We've talked about that for a while. It's kind of quieted down a little bit, but for a while there, it was A lot of people got videos mass flagged. And of course, it's enough. You get three strikes, then you're out again. No room for debate. So anything could happen. I know that you have a BitChute backup, I guess, enabled or whatever you want to call it. I've been trying to do that with Red Eyes and it's just not working for some reason. I got to try to do that because it takes, of course, the content from YouTube and kind of duplicates it on BitChute. And then they use torrent technology to spread it that way. So it's a good way. But there are alternative platforms too. But hopefully things are good and you can continue keeping up with your channel. Keep doing the good videos and everything like that. So thank you so much for coming on, Vincent. Really appreciate it. And I hope we can speak again soon.
Yeah, you too, man. Take care of that. Go and appeal that limited state video.
Yeah, exactly. Going to do that. Oh, man, what a disaster. All right, thanks so much, James. Really appreciate it.
Take care, man.
All right, boys and girls, there we go. Thank you for watching today. Great having you with us. We're going to be back with much more soon. Don't miss our Weekend Warrior show, an exclusive show that we do for members only at redicemembers.com. That is our members website. Go there if you want to support us, sign up for a membership, get a hold of a subscription. That's the best way to ensure that we can continue, especially in the wake of being financially censored, I guess, for the lack of a better term, after having our PayPal account terminated overnight, effectively losing all our recurring subscriptions as they're trying to prevent us from financially being able to sustain this alternative independent media project. So please sign up for a membership, get aboard. We have some great stuff in there. We have over 1,500 shows. We have tons of Weekend Warrior shows, exclusive videos. So get aboard. Thank you so much for watching, and we will see you guys soon. Take care.